You're listening to the Hotard Huddle Podcast. Join the conversation on sports, movies, television, music, and more.
The Hotard Huddle Podcast is not responsible for any major side effects of nostalgia, fanboying, or foul language.
Bring it in for another episode of the Hotard Huddle Podcast. Mike alongside Danny for episode 59. Now, if you've been following along with the blog, it is March, which means March Madness is in full swing. And I don't mean the actual NCAA basketball tournament. I mean Hotard Huddle version. So last couple of years, I've done March Madness brackets, taken pop culture. And this year, we have three brackets we're going to be doing. We just concluded the first. So we're going to talk a little bit about what's to come on the second one. Probably talk about the third one in the coming weeks. But we'll also dive into some NFL free agency, which I know Danny's, I could speak for you, I think, on that one and say you're excited about. But it's a great time of the year. It is a great time of the year.
Absolutely. I love it in the sense of, you know, it's pretty much the – being a Jags fan for the longest time, it was the start of my Super Bowl because, let's face it, most years we're out by week six. So happy to get it going. Love the March Madness bracket.
I'm starting a new drinking game. Every time Danny self loathes about the Jags, we take a drink.
What do you want me to do? Brag about our successful historic record? Like what? it's not self loathing. It's pointing out the obvious. Like, you know, am I excited? Do I think we finally have a team that competes? Yes. Does it suddenly disregard the last 20 years? I put up with Urban Meyer, Mike. Get off my lawn. So, but I am also excited for the March Madness. That's something you did started a few years back, just with a different twist on it. Look forward to it every year. So
that's a good time, man. Like,
and then also the actual March Madness too. I like that too, of course. But
yeah. It's one of those things, like, I fell out of college basketball a couple of years back, and, you know, so I was like, oh, well, you know what? I've always loved just the pop culture version of brackets. Who's going to stand out on top? So what we've been doing is I've been posting them to the Hotard Huddle Instagram, at Hotard Huddle, and each round, you know, all of last week, we started with the first round, worked our way to the Sweet 16, you know, eventually to the Elite Eight, Final Four, the Finals, and we just have votes. You can vote through the stories. You can vote in the comments, and majority rules. So we just concluded the National Treasure Bracket, which, man, so a couple of big surprises that happened that I found, or at least were surprises in my eyes throughout. So I divided up in two different brackets. Now we had real life national treasures. So these were your real people, dead or alive. We also had a fictional national treasure bracket of fictional people. So your Ron Swanson's, who is the one
real
Ron Swanson's real somewhere.
Prove me wrong.
Like, Ron Swanson gets bounced by Chandler Bing in round two. And, you know, the final ended up being George Feeney against Robin Williams. Robin Williams did, in fact, take it home. And, you know, the thing that I think was in play there for a lot of people is the balance between fictional and real. And this is what I explained to several people about this, because I had a feeling this was going to be the final right off the rip. And it's funny, of course, like, one of my good friends keeps telling me, oh, this shit's rigged. Like, you know who's going to make it. I'm like, no, I just know my readers, all 12 of them, you know? So, speaking of self-loathing, but anytime I've done stuff like this in regards to, you know, George Feeney, I have a lot of people my age, a lot of, you know, late 80s, early 90s, mid 90s babies who love Boy Meets World, love George Feeney. But also, on the other side of that, you have Robin Williams. And again, when you talk about, you know, actors of the 90s and 2000s. I mean, that's peak. You know, you had Robin Williams, you had Jim Carrey, you had Adam Sandler, a lot of these comedic actors. Now, Robin Williams, as opposed to those, which, and this is no knock on Carrey or Adam Sandler, because they can do dramatic roles, but Robin Williams just brought this element of drama to every role he did, while also simultaneously bringing so much lighthearted humor. So from the start, even though, you know, they weren't the number one seed of the brackets, I saw them making a deep run. Both of them did. I mean, you know, Feeney mowed through in round one, trying to find where he is on the dang bracket here. Mowed through Olivia Pope, then Will McAvoy, then Chandler, then Michael Scott. And then when you go to the other side, we had Robin Williams mowed through Tom Hanks, which was his closest one. And I knew that one was going to be close in round one, but he ends up taking 53% of the vote and then just absolutely demolishes Dolly Parton, Mr. Rogers, and even Betty White, which was a little surprising. So Robin Williams did win the first bracket. And I'm not going to lie. This is going to sound weird to say, but I'm a little disappointed. I was pulling for my man, George.
Feeney, yeah. And also, Robin Williams had a much harder path, didn't he?
Yes.
I didn't realize that until now. Yeah, I wonder, you know, with some of the characters that Feeney went through, you know, they're more like very, very almost like cult following. You know, Olivia Pope, Will McAvoy, who's one of my all-time favorite characters in Newsroom. But, you know, if you ask a lot of people, you know,
they're not popular by demand.
And they get put in because they're so powerful of a character, and they do have that cult following. But like you said, Robin Williams to knock off Tom Hanks, I mean, geez, like, you know, you think this year's selection committee sucks. At least you got it right as far as who to put in. Because
interesting. So when I was seeding them, I mean, so it was the 6 versus 11 matchup in round one. Williams was the 11th seed in that bracket. Mm-hmm. And even though he won the whole thing, I mean, it's kind of the Cinderella story, if you will. But when I was ranking them, I mean, there's a couple of people he could definitively be ahead of in terms of national treasure. But here's what's funny. Dolly Parton was the 3 seed. Mr. Rogers was the 2 seed. And Betty White was the 1 seed. And I mean, just mowed through all three of them.
How did you decide the seeding?
So I was kind of thinking, like, from just a popularity perspective, like if you Google celebrity national treasures, Betty White, Mr. Rogers, Dolly Parton, all of them are going to be on that list. Like, Danny DeVito was also a 5 seed. He's another one who, if you Google this, they are going to be universally on every single list. I mean, it's non-negotiable. I kind of took it from that perspective with at least the real life people. Now with the fictional, it's a little bit different. So like, you know, if you look up a list of that, you're going to find a freaking mixed bag of shit.
Yeah, you look up 10 lists, you got 10 different answers.
Who won't be on a lot of people's lists, but it's because Newsroom isn't a wildly popular show.
Right. And it's your blog, your podcast. I get it. You know, but, flex the power. So
yeah. But Robin Williams ended up winning. But like I said, it was a little disappointing to see George get beat. They Robin took 61% of the vote in the final. But it was fun. I mean, you know, it was pretty lopsided. You had a couple of really interesting and close matchups. I already alluded to Hanks versus Williams in round one. The Elite Eight, Betty White against Danny DeVito was another very close one, 55-45, which was a lot of fun. And another matchup I thought could go either way.
Mm-hmm.
So
it could have gone the distance too, like, you know, depending on when they meet, how they meet, stuff like that. So No, this was a cool bracket you did. Like I said, I enjoy it. As you were talking, I got thinking about it. You know, with Robin Williams, you know, the other side is, you know, we've been without Robin Williams for quite some time now.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess it's almost the, I don't know what the word would be, but I think, like, you know, Robin Williams was the guy that, like you said, tugged on the heartstrings and everything, but he was also pretty edgy at times. So, mm-hmm. you know, hearing you talk, I'm like, man, I wonder the Robin Williams that we know with the National Treasure, you know, that he is, would he have survived, you know, the cancel culture and all the stuff today? You know, would he have kind of, you know, just hopped on his horse and, you know, rode off into the sunset? Or would he still be making movies left and right? And not only, you know, the thing about Robin Williams, like any movie, and that's, I guess, what, you know, unfortunately our kids will never know, but any movie he was ever in was amazing. You know, like Patch Adams is one of my favorites.
It's got the monologue at the end of Patch Adams about indifference, mm-hmm. I think would go in probably top three movie monologues for me all time.
Without a doubt. But then he's also Pan and Hook. 1 hour photo was
1 hour photos dark,
you know, but then he's also the genie in Aladdin. You know, I think that's why he ultimately wins it is, you know, like someone like Betty White or Danny DeVito coming from that side of the bracket. All they know how to do is them, which is good. That's why we like them. They're so authentic. But Robin Williams was just authentic with 18 different styles, you know, personalities, because I feel like he never sacrificed his personality, you know. So that
was also, you know, we mentioned how long ago it was that we lost him. Mm-hmm. But that also speaks volumes to how fondly he is remembered as well. And I love, you know, I think that's really great. For a couple of reasons. One, because again, when I go back to my childhood, you know, he was peak as far as movie stars. I mean, he's coming up on 10 years this year, actually, in August. And wow. The unfortunate thing, and this is another thing, I'm actually writing about this in a column I'm currently writing about the mix of generations, kind of talking about the generational war between millennials, boomers, millennials, Gen Z boomers, whatever it is. But one of the things I talk about in that column is mental health. And, you know, I think for him to go out in a way, it really opened up a conversation that wasn't being had 10 years mm-hmm. ago about the stigma that is mental health. Now, for all intents and purposes, to kind of paint the light of those who forget, I mean, he had Lewy body dementia, which is debilitating. And, you know, when the news broke that he committed suicide, I mean, that is, oh my God, like even 10 years later, that's a tough pill to swallow. Yeah. Because those characters you talk about brought so much life. I mean, from everyone, from Genie. Another one of my favorite movies is Good Will Hunting.
Good Will Hunting, yeah, absolutely.
Him as Sean in that is just, mm-hmm. oh, God, chef's kiss. Like, you know, we talk about, I mentioned earlier, Patch Adams having one of my favorite movie monologues. Good Will Hunting is in my top five movies. Mm-hmm. One of the best. He denied George Feeney a second time champion.
Yeah, well, and here's the thing, like, real quick before I kind of transition into Feeney, because it's, you know, you hit on a good part, but we probably just rattled off half a dozen movies, and there's people that are going to listen to this and be like, yeah, you didn't even mention my favorite movie, which could be, you know, Mrs. Doubtfire, Dead Poets Society. Jumanji, like all, you know, anything like
Jumanji this weekend.
Yeah. So, you know, it's all of those things that come in, and then, you know, the Night at the Museum. I just like, you know,
good old Teddy.
Teddy Roosevelt, you know, like, but the one thing you talked about when you talk about like mental health, mental clarity, stuff like that, like, you know, it's kind of the perfect segue to George Feeney, who really molded, especially our generation, let's face it, you know, because he was the guy that, you know, the lovable, wise neighbor, mentor, teacher, everything you look for in life, as far as advice goes, Feeney was there, you know, and he was TGI Friday, like, you know, like everything along those lines. So it kind of just makes sense, like, you know, that those two would face off. I think, and I could be wrong, I mean, I want to make sure I'm not exaggerating or embellishing, but I think when you first started this bracket, I think you and I kind of ran down and said, well, I think this is the, you know, the finals. I think I might have said, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if Betty White was in. Yeah. But coming from the fictional characters, I mean, George Feeney's...
Feeney and four, baby.
Yeah, you know, like...
Well, and no, that's what I kind of said earlier, too, is like, you know, of course, going back to, you know, one of my friends busting my ball saying, ah, it's rigged. And again, it goes back to, I know my audience. I know who's voting on this. So getting Feeney there, that was a definitive. Now, I thought the real life bracket was brutal. Like, yeah. Tom Hanks gets past Robin Williams in round one. If that vote just swings the other way.
Yeah.
That bracket changes entirely. Yeah.
And then you wonder, like, hey, you know, if I think you said it was Williams, Betty White in the what we would call the final four, right?
Yes.
You know, like if DeVito knocks off her, you know, do you have someone or DeVito is there a runaway? Robin, you know, like, so.
Well, the other one too is Dolly and Mr. Rogers. You know, mm-hmm. Robin Williams knocks them off, like, and. Mr. Rogers was another one that was getting a lot of votes in those early rounds. So
yeah,
well, it's always interesting. It all boils down to the matchup.
Well, that was it, because like, and that's what made this bracket, pretty cool in hindsight, you know, because like I said, if DeVito knocks off Betty White, things I never thought I'd say for a thousand, Alex, if DeVito knocks off Betty White, then somehow knocks off Robin Williams. I don't think it would happen, but let's say DeVito winds up in the finals. Feeney cakewalks over him, and that's not a shot at Danny DeVito. Yeah. It's just, you know, like, talk about the perfect opponents, you know, and it was a cool thing. And, you know, for people
I'd be
that
interested to see how a Feeney Mr. Rogers matchup would have been.
Feeney would have cakewalked it.
Yeah.
And for no other reason than, like you said, you know your audience. You and I know the significance of Mr. Rogers. We didn't feel it. Feeney impacted us. You know? Yeah. Mr. Rogers, like for me, I know his clips and Tom Hanks playing him. You had a guy in the bracket playing another guy. Clips
at this point of yeah. Mr. Rogers, you know, talking to the government, his clip, one of my favorite scenes yeah. from his show was sharing the pool with the black police officer, washing mm-hmm. their feet together on a hot day. Like,
yeah.
just because that was shown at a time where racial segregation was so prevalent. He, and I mean, when you talk about national treasures, he truly was one. It's undeniable.
Yeah.
Like,
and he probably was someone that could have made it in any generation.
Absolutely.
He just happened to be the generation before us, or generation or two before, however you want to, you know, chalk it up.
But all in all, fun bracket. A lot of fun. So into the next bracket. So we're, again, I'm doing three of these. So we got this next bracket, which voting is going to start this week. Sports movies. A couple of years ago, the first year I started doing this in 2017, we did sports movie characters. We're going to go to sports movies now. And we're breaking it up into two different categories here. So we are going to be doing movies based on real life, or movies based on true stories, mm-hmm. and then fictional movies. So with that being said, I mean, you know, the two pictures I posted in the social media posts I did right before we started recording was, you know, Rudy and the Mighty Ducks, just because mm-hmm. that's two of my favorites. But, You know, the first movie I'm going to talk about is one of our favorites, which it has to be a lower seed in the fictional category, but Draft Day.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, and I understand the seeding. It makes sense, you know.
It's that cult following that you kind of alluded exactly. to with the other bracket. But one of the matchups that would be really interesting, and if I were to do a cross bracket, I think Moneyball is the real life equivalent to Draft Day. The structure of the movie, the makeup yeah. of it, the flow of it. And it's two of my favorite movies in the yeah. sports realm, like both of which are in my top 10 probably.
Yeah. I would probably put Moneyball probably has a little bit more of a following because it was also
I think Moneyball, as far as real life movies go, it's gonna be a top four seed.
Yeah, I think it's one of those that there's multiple ways to draw it in. If you're a baseball fan, you know, you're gonna go there. If you're someone that you know, likes the, you know, you're a baseball fan, you heard of the analytics before the movie came out. There was, you know, it was a book first, obviously, you know, like, so there's a bunch
like watching Brad Pitt eat and act at the same time.
Yeah. You know, Fat Jonah Hill, like, which I, you know, I just mean it like different points. I'm not, you know, but, I enjoy awkward Jonah Hill.
Yeah.
You know, and that was, well. yeah, you know, so, but I'm also like, I think that's going to be the same thing. I think you're based on true stories is going to be a much harder bracket to get through.
Yeah.
And I think it's just because of the fictional movies, you're probably going to have like your top four that maybe one gets knocked off, but overall, whatever the seating is, you decide, you know, it's probably going to go not chalk, but pretty close, you know?
Here's what's going to be interesting. And this is something because I haven't decided the seating yet. I haven't put together a list. That'll be coming. But I feel like the fictional side is going to be dominated by baseball movies.
Yeah.
Because personally, when it comes to sports movies in general, I think baseball movies knock it out of the park. Like, you have your good football movies here and there, but overwhelmingly, if we're picking just a sport, I think baseball is second to none.
Yeah, I could see that, you know, but I also think, you know, obviously, you know, my favorite fictional sports movie is a football movie and The Replacements, you know. You know, and to the point where Shane Falco might as well, if it was based on a true story, I would believe it, you know?
Yeah.
It's one of those things, but I also think, you know, it's one of those things too, where I don't know that it's just going to be baseball, because when you start getting outside of the major four sports, well, Rocky's in there. The Creed movies are in there. Mighty Ducks, like you said.
Happy Gilmore has to be in there.
Happy Gilmore's in there, you know, and Jerry Maguire. I mean, do you consider Jerry Maguire a sports movie?
I consider Jerry Maguire a sports movie. I mean, I know he's a sports agent, but I wouldn't consider that a sports movie.
All right, well, tough it is. Also, you know, Longest Yard, either version. Talladega Nights, you know, like. I think the reason why you're not going to see, I mean, yeah, I think baseball may have more at the end, but I don't think it's going to be as cut and dry, like you're saying, because those obscure sports, you know, compared to the big four, I mean, obviously NASCAR racing has a huge following, you know, dodgeball. Yeah. Like you said, Happy Gilmore's one, like there's quite a few that, you know, are going to go in, you know, if you're looking for like a more serious movie instead of a comedy, probably the equivalent of like a playing game, but Warrior with Tom Hardy and Joel Edgerton, like,
yeah,
fantastic, you know? So Major League, Major League's going to help the baseball.
Major League's going to be a top three yeah. seed.
But then you're also thinking like, okay, well, when it goes fictional, it gets obscure. Like, what are you considering like the Karate Kid? Because karate, to me, they're competing. So where do we draw the line, you know? That's for you to decide. I'm glad you have to figure it out.
That's a good question. Here's what's funny. Here's a sports movie that no one's really going to deem necessarily a sports movie, but in all honesty, it's one of my favorite movies of like 90s, 2000s, but Bring It On.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a cheerleading movie. There's big competition at the end. But, yeah. You know, yeah.
Cool runnings. Cool runnings.
Cool runnings, man.
I mean, dude, that's going to be a tough bracket to seed and pick.
I'm going to have to fucking just make a subcategory in the first round of just Adam Sandler sports movies.
I'm telling you, like, like I'm looking through, you see me looking down. It's cause I'm obviously looking through trying to find more movies that just, should be in here. Please don't put The American Underdog.
I was going to ask, cause that's one I saw recently. I watched it within the last year, actually. I was on a plane, and I'm like, I'll turn this on. Dude, that is a well-done movie. Now, even if I were to rank it among fictional sports movies, I don't think it would crack my top 20, but it's very good.
Well, American Underdog's Kurt Warner's story.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
So it'd be on the other
side of the bracket.
Other side, yeah.
My bad.
Kurt Warner's not real.
Kurt Warner isn't real. What are you talking about?
Damn, you dig for a meal?
But no, even in that subcategory, I mean, I don't know that it's top 20.
I don't think so.
But it's very good. And if you haven't watched it, watch it.
it's good, but I kind of hope. Well, I'll put it to you this way: I wish it had more of a feel like The Replacements, like Any Given Sunday, which is a great movie. Like, you know, it looked like actors trying to act like football players rather than the other way around, you know, like Any Given Sunday, you can't, like, you felt in it, you know, it felt like there was real hit stuff like this. That just kind of, even Invincible is better than that.
Let me ask you this. If you were to pick a one seed for both sides of the bracket, or actually I'll take that back. Give me your top two seeds on both sides of the bracket.
Okay. Man, if I had to, like, real quick, just off the rip, I am putting The Replacements because it's my own choice on the bracket. For the nonfiction, well, for fictional, I might put The Replacements and Major League. Because Major League, when you try to do these seedings, I kind of think, like, how many can grab a different, like, multiple generations? You know, Major League being that kind of cheesy 90s sports comedy, like, fits the part. And it was before Charlie Sheen had Tiger Blood in him. So I would probably go them.
So on the fictional side, before I let you get into the non-fictional. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a big whiff. The reason being, I think there's a definitive one seed on the fictional side, and it's The Sandlot.
See, I wouldn't – I'll put it to you this way. If you put it at one, I wouldn't be against it. It's just – again, it's a preference thing, right? In fact, I put Major League and baseball movies above The Sandlot. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't love and appreciate The Sandlot. It just – you know, I've probably watched Major League and can quote Major League, Major League 2, all that, you know, much more. So that's kind of why it gets the nod. For number one, now, if I'm going with my personal one, and I'm not going to choose it as number one, but one of my favorite nonfictions is Miracle.
Yeah.
You know,
it's out there.
But let's face it, that's not a number one seed. It's a solid 4 or 5, probably.
I'm going to Oh my God. All right. I'll let you finish. I have something I just discovered that's freaking hilarious that I didn't even think about in terms of sports movies.
I'm probably going, even though it wouldn't be my personal number one, I do think you probably give Rudy the nod just because of the, everyone's heard of Rudy.
That's going to be the number one for the nonfiction side.
And then, I don't know, man. There's a bunch. I mean, I'm looking, you know, maybe Remember the Titans.
I think one that I don't know that I'm, if all the bullshit didn't come out about it, I think Blindside has a very strong case at two.
That's what I wanted to, and it was exactly that. That was what it was for me, was, well,
all the drama around it.
Exactly, yeah.
But hey, so highest grossing sports movie of all time. What do you think it is?
Is it one of the top four sports, the big four?
No.
Okay. Then I would have to think Rocky.
Uh-uh. It's a racing movie.
Talladega Nights?
It's fucking Cars.
Oh, come on. No. Cars? No.
I was looking at the highest grossing sports movies, and I'm like, cool. And I'm getting to number one. 461 million.
Here's why I don't consider Cars a sports movie. Because the majority of the characters, and I know, like, look, I get it with, like, only Rocky's in the ring. So before people come at me, like, but I don't know, dude. I just never considered Cars a sports movie. I get it, like Lightning McQueen and all that. I didn't
until I just saw this.
I mean, it's one of those, like, is a hot dog a sandwich type of things. Like, yeah, I guess if you really want to get down to the nitty gritty, like, I don't know,
well,
man.
That's how I feel about Jerry Maguire, which is number four on that list.
Yeah. So, but Jerry Maguire, he's a sports agent. I mean, it's in the name, you know. Yeah. With Cars, his best friend is Larry the Cable Guy, is Mater, which is a rusted tow truck. Like, we are not the same, you know, like, you know, and it's just, I guess, I don't know, if you put it on that bracket, I think it gets smoked.
Oh, I'm not putting it on the bracket. Don't worry.
You know, yeah, like, if that's the case, Toy Story is
as much as I want to, because you know I'm a freaking mark for the Cars franchise.
Toy Story is a sports movie because Woody's a cowboy. Cowboys, rodeo, boom, face. Like, no, it's not how it works, you know? Like, I don't know. Why are we here? Like, you know, moving on from Lightning McQueen. But like I said, I think I said, going back to it, Rudy, you know what? I might put Rocky as a one seed or a high two.
It's a strong seed.
For the fictional, you know. But yeah, probably Rudy, Hoosiers. I don't know. Like, it kind of fell off in recent times. I think it's been surpassed. Coach Carter's good, but it's not.
And a Coach Carter's interesting because that's one I think people our age love. But outside of that, I don't think a lot of people really know or care about it. Maybe both. I don't know.
Yeah. Cobb. Cobb is a fantastic movie that no one's ever watched with Tommy Lee Jones. You know, like,
dude, it's funny. I was, when I was driving to Louisiana, one of the things I do on long car rides is I listen to trivia shows. There's this trivia podcast that I really like that's all pop culture. And there was a movie category, and one of the questions was about that movie. And I was like, that's got to be Cobb. And sure enough, it was. I think the question was Tommy Lee Jones played this baseball player or whatever. And I was like, I don't know why, but Cobb is just coming to me. And like, one of those movies I don't think I have ever really seen, but I know about.
The answer is Men in Black.
Right.
No, like, right. No. No, I don't know why when you said that's got to be Cobb, I immediately thought of Jim Ross. Like,
That's gotta be Kane.
That's gotta be Cobb. That's gotta be
Cobb. As you should.
Yeah. You know, Ready to Rumble. Is pro wrestling considered a sport? Like,
absolutely.
I mean, I think so, based on the talent, right? Yeah, maybe scripted and outlined, but you know
what? I'm writing it down because I am throwing that in the fictional side because, dude, you want to talk about a cult following? There are a lot of friends of mine who love professional wrestling. Who will make that become an upset pick for that bracket.
Yeah.
Fucking Peter Rumble's about to knock off Major League in the first round.
Oh, and I would be all about it. All about it, dude. And
Titus Sinclair is the biggest heel of all time.
Yeah. Like, it's fantastic. So
it is. So, but that's what we're looking at for the second bracket that we'll be doing. But now let's get to some NFL free agency. This is something you and I have been, on the phone about constantly. Also, it's become the running joke in our group chat that Danny Schefter is here because, well, Danny Schefter is going to break all the fucking news and we don't have to scroll on Twitter and go find it because Danny Schefter's on top of it.
I am here to serve. that's how it is. So, but no, I do like it because for the same reason I said earlier, like, for the most part, the Jags have been historically bad, which usually means they don't retain good players. Usually means we have a lot of cap space, a new coach, a new beginning, and we always brought in names. Now, ultimately, a lot of them fizzled out. But, free agency, legal tampering, all that, which I love, but they really should just get rid of it. Like, hey, you can sign your guys now, but I enjoy it. Also, this year more than ever, there's some, old face, new place really going on, especially running backs. There's been one thing that's been pointed out to me is how historically bad the 21-22 quarterback draft classes were, considering that only two of them. So I saw this fact the other day. In those drafts, there were a total of 19 players drafted. In the 21 draft, which was headlined by Trevor Lawrence on the Jacksonville Jaguars. And then the 2022, which was like Kenny Pickett and all them. Well, out of 19 quarterbacks drafted, only two are still starting in the league. One being Trevor, first overall in the 2021 draft. Do you know who the other one is? Mr. Irrelevant, Brock Purdy. So the first and the last, literally, are the only ones. Everyone else, for the majority of them, aren't even on the same team or won't be on the same team at the start of the league year. Zach Wilson, no one knows what to do with him. Like, he's probably just going to be outright released. If you consider that Fields went for a sixth, that could be a conditional fourth. You realize Justin Fields got traded for the same thing the Jags traded Blaine Gabbert for.
Here's what's, and as far as like big winners, Steelers are one of them because that quarterback room just got infinitely better and it still may not even be good enough, but it got infinitely better and it's only cost them about $3.5 million.
That's why it got better, because if Russ goes over on that contract that he had in Denver, that room is not better. I think Russ's best days are behind him. I think he is a shell. He is Patrick Ewing the last year on the Magic. Like, dude is not the same quarterback. I think the Steelers know that. And speaking of Moneyball,
somebody to make routine throws, who can make the routine throws.
Well, it's like the quote in Moneyball. You want to stay in the show, and I want to squeeze the last bit of baseball. That's Tomlin. Just insert football and Russ.
Yes.
And then they have a plan with Fields. I mean, come on.
Here's the interesting part about Fields, because I was having this conversation with someone earlier after Fields did go for the sixth rounder, and they're like, I mean, what is he not that good? Maybe not. I feel like the jury's still out on Fields. I wouldn't be willing to mortgage a whole lot for him, but That being said, the reason he went for so low and the reason it makes all these other teams look bad who didn't trade for him is the fact that, well, a lot of these teams probably didn't trade because they know what's hanging on the other end of that, which is a huge payday you're going to have to give him at some point. And do you want to tie up $250 million to that wagon? Abso-fucking-lutely not. No way, no how. Which brings us to another big winner, which is the Bears. Dude, I mean, the Caleb Williams show is here. There's no doubt about it.
I mean, you know, I'm in the minority, and I know I'm in the minority, but I'm just not as big on Caleb Williams as a lot of other people are. By no means, this
but
is
I don't
not
think
a,
it's a minority anymore at this point. I think everyone's trashing him.
Well, yeah, but I think that's just pre-draft smoke. I've never really bought into him. I think he's a look. I think he's a great player. Is he the overall consensus number one? I guess in the sake in the sense of quarterbacks go number one a lot. You know, do I think he's the best player in the draft? No. But that's the draft a lot of times. You know, with the Bears, what I do like that they did is they realized their mistake with Fields not having anyone around him. And they were like, hey, we're gonna start fresh. By the way, here's DeAndre Swift, who had a hell of a year with Philly. We already had DJ Moore. They just brought in Keenan Allen through a trade.
Fourth rounder. They didn't give up much for him at all.
Yeah. And look, is he the same player from 5 years ago? No. But he's also the number two. When has Keenan Allen ever been a number two receiver?
He also just came off of his best season.
Well, that's – but what I mean is he also – you know, there's arguments everywhere, right? Because, well, Eckler's there, Herbert, Mike Williams, who just signed with the Jets today, actually. I think Keenan Allen's a great receiver. What I guess what I'm trying to say is I like that he doesn't have to be – that overall number one, beat the double team, stuff like that, because you have DJ Moore. You have to play them honest now, and I think that goes great. And then you also had Cole Kmet, so they're actually keeping some of the talent that they're drafting too. That's what I meant. I didn't mean that Keenan Allen, you know, I said Russ fell off a cliff. I'm not saying that about Keenan Allen. I'm saying Keenan Allen finally is in a spot where he isn't the same player as 5 years ago, and that's okay, because 5 years ago he was being a double team. I think this year Mike Williams probably helped that a lot. But like you said, production's production. You know, I'm not arguing that. But I think the Bears, what they're going to ask of him is, I think, you know, you mentioned he had his best year this year. I wouldn't be shocked if he has his best year of his career this upcoming year, because he doesn't have to fight double teams and, you know, factor all of that in that he had to do when he was younger in his career. You know, it was him and Gates, maybe, you know, like, who was the number two before Mike Williams came along? Was it Vincent Jackson?
Oh, God, no. It wasn't Vincent Jackson. He's dead.
He is dead. So, but you get what I'm saying now, right? Like, I wasn't saying, like, hey, well, you know, the guy, you know, and look, Keenan Allen's had some health issues, but it's the NFL. I mean, he's not alone there. You know, but I like what they're doing.
I also think you're undervaluing Keenan Allen here a lot, because I think Keenan Allen walks into Chicago day one. He is the number one. DJ Moore isn't the number one.
See, maybe you're right, but I disagree. I think DJ Moore has the upper hand. I'll put it to you this way. Neither of them are probably upset by it.
Absolutely not.
With the other guy being
lined
up.
Now just
yeah, they're like, hey, I'm getting touches. Let's go. Like, you know, and if you're DeAndre Swift, I mean – did you go from A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith to DJ Moore and Keenan Allen? Like, that's not
better bad duo.
At all. Yeah, that's not a bad duo. You know, and we saw what happened when teams had to play Swift honestly, you know. As far as, you know, what they're doing, I think they're going to do it right. If not, you know, polls is gone. I do think.
Here's the million-dollar question. Do the Bears get their first 4,000-yard passer in franchise history?
Yeah, but only because they have no choice. Like,
dude, offense is, I mean, maybe I'm counting my chickens before they hatch here, but that offense is going to be fucking fun.
Yeah. I mean, it really is. And we're still, I mean, now is the part in free agency where you're going to see a lot of the guys that go under the radar in the signings, you know, come to be like that third wide receiver, you know, a second tight end, you know, someone that comes in and just helps enhance the game, you know?
Well, you want to talk about under the radar signings. One of the teams that I immediately think of is a team that made the playoffs last year and surprised a lot of people, Houston Texans. They get Joe Mixon. So that answers their question at running back. Because they were kind of playing, I mean, they've had a good running back room, but I wouldn't call it great. But here's the thing. The signing that's going to go under the radar this year is Danielle Hunter. You know, last year I remember having this conversation specifically with you because he's coming off of what was a productive season, and he has been one of the most undervalued pass rushers of the last, 10 years. He's been in the league since 2015. Last year, finished the season, he had 16.5 sacks last season alone, which is tied with Chase Young for his career. Just want to make note of that. But finished with 41 pressures. It was the most he's had in a season thus far on both accounts. And now he gets to get paired with Will Anderson, who mirrored Chase Young's rookie season. So I'm going to just keep throwing Chase Young under a fucking giant bus here.
You're talking about new free agent signing Chase Young?
Yeah, new free agent signing Chase Young to the Saints on $13 million. How the
guaranteed, fuck guaranteed that 13 mil. 1 year, 13 mil guaranteed. Fucking and a neck procedure. And a neck procedure.
But Danielle Hunter, so he's had 5 seasons where he's had double-digit sacks. And he's been great for Minnesota. So getting him with D'Amico Ryans, you know, as he rebuilds the Texans team to go along with Will Anderson, I mean, dude, that's – him and Mixon are 2 home run signings, I think. And it makes the Texans infinitely better in a division that, well, you know pretty well, is not a strong one.
Yeah, I mean, I think the division surprised a lot of people with how competitive it was last year because of the Texans and Stroud. You know, you have Anthony Richardson, who showed signs of life but ultimately got hurt. But, you know, was I happy to see Hunter go to the Texans as a Jags fan? Hell no. Especially because we were supposedly close to trading for him at the deadline. Ultimately held off on Chase Young too. We didn't miss his, you know, 4 sacks, 4.5 sacks, whatever he had with San Fran. But what's crazy is Hunter signed with the Texans, and I think it was Greenard, however you say his name, who played opposite of Will Anderson, had a career year, signed with the Vikings. They literally swapped. yet the Texans upgraded, you know, and to the Vikings' credit, like, they knew Hunter was gone. So they got a quality player in return.
Well, they got a young player in return. That's what the Vikings did well, was they went ahead and got some youth because they need it. They just lost Kirk Cousins, who went to the Falcons. And again, that's another big winner, I think, in free agency. So they're getting younger. I think the Vikings did a hell of a job ensuring that they got some youth there as they're going through a little bit of a small rebuild. Now, that small rebuild could even be a playoff team if they get their quarterback situation correctly. I don't think that the Texans, the Vikings are in a bad position because they did get Aaron Jones, who does have some, you know, wear and tear on the tires, but still productive and a good running back. But, you know, even let's assume they're going to make a splash in the draft. They traded and got another first round pick to give them leverage to trade up and grab their future.
Right.
If they want. If they don't, maybe they stack some weapons in their favor and they just let Sam Darnold have a decent season. Because I think if Sam Darnold's your fallback option, I think you're in a good spot.
I mean, yeah, I mean, and also there's still going to be players that get moved around as after the draft, you know, training camp releases, stuff like that. So what they did do is make sure that they weren't a total dumpster fire and then added some pieces to where they you can go to the Vikings and say, we're a quarterback away. Because I don't think Darnold's a bad – I look at him as like a Tyrod Taylor, you know, kind of Josh McCown, Fitzmagic, like that type of guy at this point in his career where, dude, he is not going to march you down the field and win the game. But he's not Nathan Peterman, free agent signing Nathan Peterman to the New Orleans Saints, of course. But, you know.
Real big upgrade from Jameis there.
Yeah, like, well, I forgot who said it, but you don't have to worry about the fans saying, let's put in the backup.
That was our good buddy, Stoche, who's known for bad free agency moves.
Yeah, so it's one of those things. But, you know, some of the other things that was wild, it wasn't even just teams winning. Like, it seemed like the running back market's starting to kind of come back, you know.
They got their bags.
Yeah, and big names. Like you had mentioned Mixon, Saquon going. What's that? Yeah, Saquon going to a division rival. Aaron Jones going to a division rival. And I know you said he's probably reached the apex of his career. But if you're asking me, Aaron Jones, Alexander Mattison, you know, Mattison went to the Raiders. I thought it was a good fit. You know, Minshew went to the Raiders. Thought it was a good fit.
So one of my favorite stories to come out of free agency. So, yeah, there was the clip of Minshew last year as Max Crosby kept calling him a little ass boy. He keeps calling me a little ass boy. I don't know what it means.
Yeah.
And it's funny. That was one of the first questions he gets asked arriving in Vegas. And I'm like, yes.
But see, that's also the beauty of free agency, too, is, you know, those sub stories kind of going like Mike Gesicki going to the Bengals with Ja'Marr Chase, you know, like, you know, he's going to have to gritty and Jamar's going to teach him and all that. Like, you know, there's stuff like that. But then there's also, you know, you mentioned the running backs and there's big name running backs that switch. Tony Pollard to Titan.
Eckler went to the Commanders.
There's a bunch of musical chairs with it. Gus Edwards is a Charger. Zach Moss went to the Bengals.
Yep, Antonio Gibson. Gonna love using Gus the Bus.
Yeah, Antonio Gibson went to the Patriots, and I thought that was a low-key great signing because him and Ramondre Stevenson, for a team that doesn't know what their identity is. Oh, and Derrick Henry went to the Ravens.
Yeah.
You know, it's insane. So
can't wait for that to somehow fail. So one of the teams that – although they didn't really add anyone that I think is one of the offseason winners right now is Tampa Bay or Tampa Baker, as we should say. Mm-hmm. Because while they didn't get any new pieces, I mean, they retained a wild card team and they're going to try to run it back in a division that's, well, we don't know what the fuck the Saints are doing. Carolina's shot for the next several years.
Carolina's the equivalent to sitting at the kids' table at Thanksgiving.
Pretty much. Like, so you got Carolina doing whatever they're doing, fucking eating crayons and playing with their freaking Tinker Toys. But
and then the Falcons loaded up. The Falcons are Falcons who they need to be. Some
good pieces, but Tampa Bay, you get Baker Mayfield back, you get Mike Evans back, you get Antoine Winfield, you get Lavonte Davis.
Yep.
Or Lavonte David. So they retained their biggest free agents without missing a beat. So
yeah,
I think that's huge for them.
I agree. You know, sometimes I don't know what the equivalent to, like, you know, addition by subtraction, but what they did is they, like you said, they retained their key pieces. You know,
they said, fuck it, we're going to run it back.
Well, and look at the, you know, compare them to the Vikings. The Vikings let their franchise quarterback walk away to Atlanta, you know? So if Tampa does that, I mean, yeah, you're saying like, hey, Sam Darnold, like, yeah, he can do the job. Kyle Trask absolutely cannot.
Right.
I mean, so you're like, all right, well, time to give a pick away to try and gamble on a quarterback or overpay for a quarterback that probably isn't the same skill set as Baker Mayfield. I know you and I are both Baker fans, but I mean, it's probably not. I mean, who are you bringing in? Like I said, Tyrod Taylor.
Well, and that's where I think the Falcons made a good move in getting Cousins, because they're sitting at a very weird spot where they would have to mortgage a lot of picks to get in that top three to try to grab a Drake May, a Jaden Daniels. And so take Kirk Cousins, give yourself time, because that roster is not bad. It wasn't bad last year, and I've been saying this, and I will beat the dead horse on this. They had the worst coach in the NFL last year, paired with the worst quarterback room in the NFL last year.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they still managed to be competitive. I mean, I feel like the only way you could go is up. And, you know, of course, people have scoffed at the Kirk Cousins contract, but Kirk Cousins, and if anyone wants to at me on this, I'll fucking bury you, is one of probably the five or six most consistent quarterbacks of the last 10 years.
I mean, and his wife's from the area. Like, he went in day one fan favorite, you know, like he beloved there. And there was already the pieces around. It's just no one was driving the bus. You know, you have first round pick Kyle Pitts, first round pick Drake London, first round pick Bijan Robinson. Like, all of this investment. By the way, the guy that is supposed to drive the bus is Desmond Ridder. Like, It just sounds like a cruel joke. And look, Ridder, I think, went to Arizona to back up Kyler. Like, you know, they did right by him, you know, not asking him to be behind Kirk. But it is what it is. But like you said, you know, the other thing that Tampa did, Mike, that I liked was, like you said, they re-signed their guys, even Chase Edmonds. They did release Shaq Barrett, but he wasn't, you could stand to get away from him, but they signed guys that had previously had success with them, like Jordan Whitehead. They wanted to keep him 2 years ago. He goes to the Jets, doesn't go bad there, but ultimately not retained. Now he's back home to pair with Antoine Winfield. Like, you know, that's a great thing. They got Bryce Hall on a, I think, a 1 year deal. Like, that's not bad. So that's going to be a good division to see play out. Like I said, being the homer of the Jags, I like the signings that we got ultimately, because I think our GM's fighting for his job. So he's going to pull out all the stops, which makes for an exciting time. Sucked losing Ridley, but for $92 million a year, I get it. You know, like,
you don't want to pay that.
Yeah, nor could we if we were going to re-sign Josh Allen, who's franchise tagged, and ultimately re-sign Trevor Lawrence. Like, you just can't make that work. So, but we got Arik Armstead. I'm really excited about that. Mitch Morse from Buffalo, Gabe Davis from Buffalo. I know you and I both kind of talked about it. Like, the plan for Gabe Davis was to come in with Ridley, not to replace him. And they,
you know, Jags just doing Jags things.
You shut your mouth.
But, you know, you mentioned Tampa Bay, and I'm going to go to this parallel, and I think it's a little, obviously a lot different. I won't say a little different, a lot different. But a couple of years ago, when a little quarterback by the name of Tom Brady signed with Tampa Bay, I talked about the Bucs and the roster that they had and the pieces that they had and how they performed the previous season. Mm-hmm. Good defense. They were good on third down. They were good in the red zone. All the efficiency categories, they were elite. When I say elite, I mean top five in damn near every category. The problem was for them, you had Jameis Winston at the time turning the ball over like crazy. And it was hurting that team. But you look at this now, and going to Atlanta, while, again, they don't have those metrics, they weren't elite in damn near every category. They had a great third down defense last year. They were very middle of the road in most of the categories, but you can only assume that that's going to get elevated after how bad the quarterback play was, because if it wasn't a quarterback last year throwing for, 5,000 yards, 33 touchdowns, 30 interceptions, it was a quarterback who couldn't fucking move the ball. It's going to be interesting. And I don't, I won't sit here and say that I think the Falcons end up being elite next year, but they're going to be that turnaround team that I do think gets into the postseason that didn't make it last year.
Were able to do it without having to mortgage their draft. They can still bring in young talent too. Like they played the chess game of free agency on paper, right? Everyone's a winner before the season starts, but they played it the right way in the sense of they invested where they knew they needed to, and kind of go from there. So, and they also knew that they didn't need to invest in a bunch of different positions. They just had to get a couple right.
Yeah. They got their head coach. They got a quarterback. Yeah. Now, before we wrap up, so looking way ahead. So now that, the dust isn't settled on free agency, but the dust is settled on free agency.
Mm-hmm.
Looking ahead to the draft, who are your three favorite prospects in this year's draft?
Can I put a, for one, I don't know if I can put a prospect, but rather a positional group, the receivers, round one receivers, like Marvin Harrison. I'll say Marvin Harrison, but also Rome Odunze and Malik Nabers, they're studs, even Brian Thomas. But it's also a very deep wide receiver draft. So you can have guys go in the fourth round that could still see playing time, fifth round playing time.
Yeah.
So I'll say Marvin Harrison, Newton, the D tackle from Illinois, has a little bit of an Aaron Donald tendency, newly retired Aaron Donald. And then I'll say Cooper DeJean, the cornerback, safety, probably more of a cornerback out of Iowa. Like, those are the guys that, because it's overkill on the quarterbacks. I'm not, they don't intrigue me because every stone's been unturned. I'd rather find some intrigue on maybe who my team may pick. We have a new defensive coordinator, likes to play man. Our cornerbacks, now we signed Darby in free agency, but he's not spring chicken. Like, we're not typically a man team. So, but also with DeJean, he'd be the first white cornerback to play in the NFL, I think, since Jason Sehorn. which is crazy. And it's not nothing other than it's just a cool stat. Like, I could give a shit who plays that corner, or what they look like or anything like that. It's just cool to see something like that happen. So I would say them. Haven't really dove into rounds 2, 3, 4 other than just mock drafts.
I think
Brock Bowers is another one too.
Who's that?
Bowers intrigues me.
So my top three, I think, is Caleb one. And then Marvin at two. And dude, I am so high on Odunze. The fact that he might be the third receiver taken, I think, is just
that's what I mean. That's why I was kind of like, when I say a position group, because it's very, very similar to the Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson draft and all that, because even with two LSU receivers, because Brian Thomas probably goes in round one.
Yeah.
But you have guys that are, like I said, I mean, Johnny Wilson out of Florida State, he's 6'7", probably going in the third or fourth round. Like, someone's going to jump on him. He's going to get, you know, on TV, because it's just going to be a huge red zone target. If there's other ones that I'm intrigued on, it's Bo Callahan Nix. Like, I want to see what team actually tries that. Just because I think he has bust written all over him. Not a shot at him. It's just gut feeling. But I had one more question about free agency. I know we got to wrap it up, but I did want to ask you, what was your most puzzling free agent move? And if you want to go back to the draft, we can, or, you know,
I mean, I think the Titans in general, they oversigned or they overpaid Calvin Ridley. And then they overpaid someone else.
Well, they brought in Pollard.
They have $113 million tied up just into those two alone. Mm-hmm. What the fuck are you doing?
Yeah. I thought, you know, guys like that, the Cowboys kind of surprised me too, not really doing anything.
Go Cowboys, you know.
Jerry World. You know, the other one that surprised me, and I think it was just like not a head scratcher, but just
Chase Hollywood Young for $13 million.
Yeah, that really was it. But Hollywood Brown going to Kansas City could be really, really dangerous.
Oh my god, that was probably my favorite of the like just under the radar signings, because the second I saw that, I'm like, it's another number two, but him and fucking Rice, and then the fact that they'll probably grab another receiver on draft day. Oh, yeah, come on. Boy.
Like,
dude. Yeah. You know, and now I think it changes it up a little bit, because, you know, one of the things I've been saying all offseason, even before the offseason started, was did the Chiefs mortgage some future picks and try to trade up and grab one of the top guys? Now, yeah. Fuck, maybe they sit back, take Ladd McConkey.
Yeah. Like, great name, by the way.
Oh, I know. I love that. It just rolls off the fucking tongue. But
McConkey.
But I mean, dude, Brown, McConkey, and Rice could be a nice fucking trio. Similar to similar to how that Jags actually operated last year at full throttle, if you will.
Yeah, we only had it for a couple games, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was just a bunch of second-rate receivers that aren't really number ones, but meshed well together.
Top tier of the second tier, baby. That's what we are, you know? Like, we are the best of the silver medals, so.
But before we wrap up the podcast, the last thing I got to say is, you know, with WrestleMania season around the corner, Cody better finish the fucking story. That's all I know. Danny, you're
the Homelander thing.
Yeah, you did see the Homelander thing? Yeah. Dude. Oh, man, what a fucking legend. Him and The Rock, just keep going. Let's keep it going. But other than that, you know, any final thoughts here, Danny?
Other than just I'm excited that now we kind of turn into the draft. You know, I'm sure we'll have a podcast coming up where.
Oh, we got mock drafts coming up, baby.
Yeah.
That's our thing.
Yeah. And it does seem like this is a year where free agency and the draft kind of do tie in together kind of nice, you know, where in other years it's been one or the other kind of, you know?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that's it. You know, I'm also excited to see what happens in your fictional nonfiction. Really, I'm more excited about the seeding because I'm going to rip it apart.
Well, coming soon. Stay tuned. But, you know, stay on top of it with HotardHuddle.com. You can check out all the brackets, all the latest, all the podcasts, all that fun stuff. And as always, honor the huddle.
You're listening to the Hotard Huddle Podcast. Join the conversation on sports, movies, television, music, and more.
The Hotard Huddle Podcast is not responsible for any major side effects of nostalgia, fanboying, or foul language.